Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are positively in Reisterstown or Registerstown. We're giving away the Back to the Future scratch-offs courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is a summer day. Sort of huddling up here with my two baseball kemosabes who somehow, some way, have never done this together on my airwaves. Alan McCallum has been my baseball guy for 30 years. Anyone familiar with WNST knows that. And, of course, Lucas has been with us for going on 17 years now. Our 27th anniversary begins on August 3rd. I'm getting out to new places like Reader's Crab House here. We're going to be out at 1623 Brewing in Eldersburg in a couple of weeks. We have Old Faithful on the 10th, the new Costas in Timonium. That'll happen in the afternoon. And we're also going to Deep Pasquale's in Canton. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great, great show. Dan Rodericks is coming. Joe Giordano's coming. Pete Carinji's stopping by that day. That's the 8th. But right now we're in Reisterstown. Luke is here. Alan is here. We are in the midst of a baseball conversation in regard to healing the Baltimore Orioles. This is so typical. And, Alan, I'm going to roll you under the bus big time right now. Because back in the day, Alan did radio and Spiro, Swami, all these guys. Messina was there. And whenever I would leave them to do anything, I'm trying to sell things, deal with listeners, do email. I come back. And they're talking about OPS, or they're talking about war.
We weren't talking about OPS and war back in the day, I can assure
all
you.
All I know is I went and peed, and I came back. I tried to get your orders in for lunch, and I sit down, and I put my headset, and the first thing I hear is, and then there's Rutschman. So I walked in on, and then there's Rutschman, but I did miss the last 4.5 minutes of your off-air ramblings. I think we want to start with this, with Luke's premise, which is, they got to hit the ball in the second half. That's the only thing that matters. You talking about Elias keeping his gig and where that is, and me wondering if any of them really know what they're doing. And, Luke, you had some sort of GPS metaphor that you used as to how lost they are in the desert at this point. Yeah. When, as we sit here, they have been no hit deep into games 3 out of the last 5 days.
Yeah, and, I mean, obviously the last week has been very ugly. And I think we all acknowledge they played better over the last month, but the bar was so extraordinarily low through the third week of May, as Brandon Hyde can attest to, which, by the way, I'll continue to say Brandon Hyde having a way better summer than anyone in Baltimore at this point. I said that at the time, and that still holds true.
Only guy happier than him is going to be when you're in Wildwood next week.
But you know what? And full disclosure, I was – Alan and I were talking a little bit between segments, and you know, I used this analogy where – look, when Mike Elias and Sig Meidel arrived, we know that the Orioles were absolutely in the dark ages. First of all, they had lost 115 games or whatever it was in 2018. In a year that, mind you, they entered with designs of actually hoping to make it as a wild card at the very least. And clearly that
didn't
wasn't the
card. Well, that's why they better not lose 102 this year.
So fully acknowledging there was a lot of catching up that needed to be done, they did that. They did that very successfully. They got to the point where they were considered innovating and cutting edge around baseball. And they did that. And they built this thing that from the second half of 2022 through the second half or through the first half of last year was arguably the best team in baseball and certainly one of the 2, 3, 4 best teams in baseball.
With the most coveted farm system around.
Exactly, exactly. And thinking the arrow was just pointing up in just about every way you can imagine. Okay, the pitching, you can. But you had Bradish, you had Grayson Rodriguez, you had Felix Bautista, who had been such a pleasant surprise, and all these resources. So you fast forward to where they were at the end of June last year, which was, again, a record that was right there amongst the best in baseball. Okay, their pitching questions wasn't as dominant, but their offense was a top five offense in baseball, as it had been the year before and had trended that way in a couple years. For us to talk in terms of almost feeling like a light switch was flipped, and for it to have regressed and declined as rapidly as it has, and it's gotten worse, not so much the last month, but speaking in terms of the second half of last year being middling, and then it being bottom 10, and some categories even being worse than that in 2025, I get it. Injuries are part of that. Fully acknowledge that. But still so bad where you just look at this, and it's like, it's almost like someone who had like this great toy, like a GPS that, oh man, everything's going along great. Look how smart we are. And I'm not even trying to get into like the arrogance of analytics. I know people will speak in those terms, and I'm not, but that's not even my point here. But it's almost like something just disappeared or went away, and they just, like,
it's like someone stuck a voodoo doll and stuck a knife in its back and said, "You will not succeed in anything."
And even in the minor leagues, like their numbers in the minor leagues and the lack of success in the minor leagues. Now, part of that is, yes, you did have some top prospects graduate. I understand why they're not ranked number one anymore. But even just in terms of team success and guys they've drafted the last couple of years, I mean, you know, Enrique Bradfield, who I kind of like, but he's had hamstring issues and has missed a lot of time this year. Vance Honeycutt, their first-round pick last year, has had a disaster of a start at Aberdeen, which Aberdeen notoriously is known as kind of a tough place to play. And you even look at, like, Gunnar Henderson and guys like that.
Why is it? Do you know?
I think, you know, I've heard different things about the ball. I mean, I've only watched, I think, one or two games at Aberdeen, so I don't want to speak as an authority on it. But I've heard about the, you know, the ballpark, the lighting, the atmosphere, all these different things.
Really? Okay.
But all that said, everything even in the minor leagues is not trending, other than Sam Basayo,
right,
who has looked phenomenal as a Triple-A hitter, but part of me is just like, is he going to struggle like all the other guys do when he gets called up?
So everybody wants him to come up right now, and for me, I think they get this part right, that I believe in apprenticeship, that's the first thing, and
sure,
I think he needs to earn his bones, particularly behind the plate. And he hasn't,
that's my big thing.
He hasn't played behind the plate that much. They need to get him more reps. We are seeing in real time at the major league level what happens when your catcher, who's supposed to be your field general, is not productive behind the plate defensively.
This isn't like the old days where we don't want to start his clock. You know what I mean? We lived through
it's
10
really,
years of that.
I really
we
don't
lived
think
through
it
10
is.
Years of that with Weeders and these other guys. I don't believe
they
it's
can't
that
have
with
another miss. They can't have another star prospect
come up and hit 110
and be bad. And particularly right now, be as bad as most. As difficult as they've had a time with their pitching, to have a kid come up and not be ready to manage a pitching staff is just something they can't have right now. So I think there are a lot
Fair
of pieces.
Enough.
I think there are a lot of pieces in this with Sam Basayo. I think they're right to wait. I think it would be wrong to start. I think by late August he needs to be here.
Here's what I would like to see, and I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And as fans, as media, we have enough examples here now to understand and keep reminding ourselves. Success at AAA does not equate to success in the major leagues, especially right away.
Yeah.
So now that being said, ideally, working from the circumstances they are dealing with here now in late June, knowing that Adley Rutschman's going to be out until after the All-Star break most likely, assuming it's not too much longer than that, I think if you're looking for your ideal way of how this plays out pertaining to the catching position and Samuel Basayo is Adley Rutschman comes back July 20th, somewhere around there. I am doing whatever I can to get Gary Sanchez out of here at the trade deadline, even if I need to kick in $1 million and I get a couple Dominican lottery ticket prospects.
Sure.
Because then, to me, that creates runway to then promote Samuel Basayo at some point in August. And
which
probably,
is what I thought was their,
yeah,
was their plan
and
in the first place.
And I kind of thought so, too. But I think that then puts him in a place where if Adley Rutschman's back, you're not – he's not in a position where there's too much pressure to catch him too much, because I think there's still long-term question as far as what exactly he's going to be from a defensive standpoint. You know, I think if you're looking at it ideally over the next couple years, he catches two or three times a week. Adley Rutschman catches three or four times a week. He plays a little bit of first base. He DHs plenty. You know, Kobe Mayo DH first base. And
yeah,
you're hoping, because there are some people that think he's got upside to be a Yordan Alvarez kind of bat. Now, that's putting a lot on a young 21, you know, not quite 21 years old. So let's temper our expectations in 25 and 2026 with that kind of talk. But, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I think he needs to develop behind the plate. I want to see him not catching 7 days a week at Norfolk, because you don't want to run him into the ground, but he needs to catch very regularly, more regularly than he is. You hope the elbow stays healthy, because that has actually been an issue for him the last year or two. And that kind of ties in with not knowing exactly what he looks like defensively long term.
Right.
But I was just looking at some nerdy numbers the other day. Everything about his batted ball profile at Norfolk says this guy should hit. And from a pure offensive standpoint, could end up being the best out of these guys. Could. Maybe. Who knows, right? But it looks really good on paper. But I'm with you. Let this guy catch. I think he's. I don't think he's caught 30 total games at AAA just yet. I think he's, you know, combined last year and this year, he's like 25, 26, 27, something like that. So let him catch for another month and a half, let's say. And let's look at this post-trade deadline. Gary Sanchez, in my mind, again, move him. Pay off $1 million just to get him out of here. And you have Rutschman and you have Bisaccia. You know, Maverick Hanley can be a bridge if you need a couple more weeks, whatever. That's fine. But I'd like to see Bisaccia here third week of August at the latest, but at last week of August at the latest, and then give him regular at-bats, catching, DH, a little bit of first base, and let him get whatever the first 50 plate appearances are going to look like out of his system, because he probably will
see everything you're talking about right now. Like, if Angelos was alive, none of this could happen, right? So it is a new world, right? After 30 years of one way of thinking, we're thinking about it more conventionally now, right? But there is no conventional way to think about this if the general manager is trying to keep his job,
right?
If the front office is desperate to sell tickets, and they are, because it's a mess. You know, how bad do you want to break it up? How bad do you want it to look? Where are you in bringing kids that might not be ready anyway and still going to hit a .188, right?
So let's look at this. I mean, in post-steroid era, during steroid era, guys were playing into their 40s and still putting up numbers. Post-steroids, with analytics, the move has been move veterans out earlier and bring up young guys to let them figure it out. But if you look around the league, even the Texas Rangers, who won the World Series 2 years ago, Evan Carter, who could not be stopped, Wyatt Lankford, Roman Anthony in Boston. I mean, guys, young guys are not coming up and even looking like major leaguers to the degree that they used to. Jackson Merrill in San Diego.
Well, they're also not spending time in the minors.
And sometimes they are, like, look at Corbin Carroll, who was Rookie of the Year, but
regressed.
For a lot of last year, looked lost. Now he's figured it out.
There's a level of regression that's happening that I can't remember seeing across the major leagues. So it's not just the Orioles, but when you have a team that is built on the idea that all our young guys are going to propel us to Shangri-La, you feel the effects greater than that. But there's no question that they can't have another can't-miss prospect come up and miss right now. But they've got guys, again, Kobe Mayo, who you've got to put him out in the field and say, let's figure this out. Let's figure out what you are.
And I think hasn't shown up in the numbers as much just yet, but the eyeball test, he's working more counts. He's not striking out 50% of the time like he did his first 50 plate appearances in the major leagues. And he looks more comfortable. And they've even talked about that. He's talked about it that, you know, I feel a little more. I mean, my biggest pet peeve, and I complained about to Nestor twice, and I'm going to do it a third time now, was those final two games of the Angels series. He had a two-hit game, and he had an RBI double.
And then he said,
arguably his two best games as a major leaguer. And I get it. The bar was very low.
Blaming Elias or Mancelino on that?
Both. It's more a front office thing. We need to get out of 1975, and I'm not you guys. I mean, in
the Earl Weaver
sense,
book was good, but it's not that way anymore.
The manager does not have autonomy over the batting order anymore.
Sure.
I mean, they just don't. So, like, for me, I looked at that with Kobe Mayo, and then he made two starts on the road trip.
It's crazy,
like,
and you wonder why Buck can't be a manager anymore.
Well, and analytics aside, they have so many left-handed bats. They need some right-handed bats in the lineup every day. And Mayo, if you tell me I'm not going to play Kobe Mayo against Jacob DeGrom, okay.
Fine.
I get it.
He doesn't have to play every single day, but most days.
But everybody else who is not a three-time Cy Young winner, I want him in the lineup. Because I want him to figure it out, and you don't figure it out on the bench.
And last time I checked, this offense collectively hasn't been very good. Right? We're not talking
about... They got one hit last night.
We're not talking about guys that are...
Barely.
You know, we're not talking about...
And it was Couser, and I've been dealing him off since a week and a half ago.
But it's just... Those are... Like, something like that is where I look at this, and I'm just like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like... And that's me talking. I'm an analytics guy. I'm a nerd. But, like, I see something like that, I'm like, that feels like a disconnect kind of thing right there.
That's the act of a team that's saying, we are trying to get into the playoff race before by the All-Star break, and we're going to play the lineup that statistically gives us the best chance to win.
Yeah.
And and I understand that, that's what the thought process is, but it's a bad choice.
But when you're religious with the blackjack book, and that's the way you're going to play every hand, because that's the way Sigma Idel thinks about it, that's the way Elias thinks about it.
It's a bad choice.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a bad choice even from an upside perspective. I mean, like I said, I think it was the previous segment, but I said, you know, a big part of what happens over the second half of the year, and I'm not even talking in terms of like, oh, trying to win more games. This is more like get all these young guys going, and I think you'll win more games as a result.
Yes.
I think the idea of Kobe Mayo being in the lineup, okay, maybe the next week or two that might not help you, but I'm thinking that might help you a heck of a lot more come July, August, and September, and especially, and this is really what should be in mind, 2026 and beyond.
Yes.
Right? If Kobe Mayo is truly going to be as good as his biggest proponents think he's going to be, and he's put up numbers in the minor leagues that suggest he should be good.
And the road is right in front of you because
Mountcastle just went to the 60-day IL.
He's not coming back anytime
soon. And by the way,
play the freaking kid.
Not to mention Ryan Mountcastle hadn't hit worth a you-know-what over the last year.
What would the answer be if you really, as an old-school legitimate media guy, if I could sit in the office and say to Manzolino, because I knew him, what happened there? What were you thinking there? Because Johnny Oates, and you remember Johnny, right?
Sure.
I mean, Johnny hated me in 1992 and 93 because all of my questions were questions literally in the little manager's room there. Like, Johnny, why did you have that reliever? And Johnny was like, you don't ask me questions. Like, you know, like early on, it's like, can you not ask them what they see? You know,
it's asked.
And what is said?
But it doesn't mean they give you an answer that's, you know, tangible to the point where you're
going to they saying behind closed doors after Mayo gets three hits in 2 days and they bench him, they ride.
Manzolino was asked about it. I think it was at the end of the road trip.
I'm just trying to get to their rationale beyond that's what the book says. That's easy for me to say that. If that's the answer, that's the answer.
I will say in fairness to them. Now, I'm not saying I agree with this, but I think there's a thought process that they try to acclimate and ease guys into it. I think you've seen that very clearly with how just about everyone, like even Gunnar Henderson, when you go back to late 22 when he had his cup of coffee and early in 23, they've all kind of started out just playing their platoon side, right? So the guys that were right-handed hitters, they kind of picked their spots. Maybe they'd face a few righties here and there, but they were mainly playing against lefties. That's why when Jordan Westberg was called up, Adam Frazier continued to play. Now, I would say that was ridiculous because Adam Frazier didn't hit the second half at all of 2023. But that's kind of been the progression you've seen with these guys. Jackson Holliday, until very, very recently, you know, the last month and a half, was hardly ever playing against left-handed pitching. So I think in their mind, because I think it's very clear they don't believe in reverse splits. They think that that's statistical noise. So you almost always see them.
Now that's a basis, right? I mean, you saying that really resets my mind about a lot of things they do.
No, I think...
Like, say that again. They don't believe...
I don't think they believe in
reverse splits
in many cases.
So in other words, they're never going to play a righty against the lefty if they have an option. That's the reason Laureano's here is to play against left-handers, right? Literally,
that's why he's
here.
Except that guys got hurt. And he's actually been pretty good against right-handed
Or pitching. If you are a reverse splits guy and you're Harold Baines at the end of his career and hitting left-handed pitching.
So you say that, but Harold Baines, they didn't play Harold Baines against left-handed pitching. It's so funny because he was in my head right before you said that. Harold Baines, and I think it's because he had his knee injuries, eventually they just said leave him alone against left. Harold Baines could hit off of anybody, period.
My dad used to joke, Harold Baines, his knees were so bad he could hit out of a wheelchair, though.
Yeah.
My dad loved to say that. Yeah.
I used to say, Harold Baines could be retired for 10 years. You call him up, he gets on a plane, lands in the winter somewhere.
But the idea would still be if he were a 38-year-old DH,
they
wouldn't play him against a left-hander because they don't believe in it. They fundamentally don't believe in it.
And again, okay, so I respect analytics. I respect
statistics. And by the way, I'm not saying I agree. I'm saying, to me, we have an overwhelming body of work now of a few years that shows even if it's a lefty that left-handers are hitting better against them in that year, with a few exceptions, because a lot of times, if you do look year to year, it is statistically noisy. You'll see a guy's a reverse splits guy 1 year, the next year it's the exact opposite.
But if that's their thought process, here's the reality. they've got a bunch of left-handed guys who can't hit left-handed pitching.
No question.
Right. So
they've
what
got
does
a
that
bunch
mean?
Of everyone can't hit. None of them can hit left-handed pitching. That's actually the problem.
I want to get Izzy in here in a minute. So I'm going to leave the parting shot for you guys. Rutschman. Let's just end with Rutschman with the two of you. Alan and Luke are here. Go ahead.
Before Rutschman, I would say this. I would like to see them move Gunner back to the leadoff spot because it seems to me that he's done his best in that spot, free and easy. And I'd like to see if that gets him going. Maybe the pressure of driving and runs doesn't work for him.
I think Gunner has hit much better over the last month or so, but the power
hasn't been power.
There. Yeah. But he's hitting lefties finally again, like a little bit, because he wasn't hitting lefties at all.
I don't know about Adley Rutschman. He's obviously he's got to figure it out. He was coming along.
He was.
It's like he was being rebuilt over the last.
He had kind of dumped the toe tap and kind of just having a more traditional step.
I think Adley's a guy that spends a lot of time in his head. That's the only thing I can figure, and I would like to see him just worry about getting on base. I think when a guy is completely collapsed like that, that is a hitter, not a power hitter, but a hitter. You just say, I want you to get on base. I don't care how you do it. I don't care if you walk. I don't care if you hit a single. I don't care if you bloop it over the third base.
Don't make it out.
Trip down. Get on base. And I think guys that are natural hitters, and I'm not certain that Adley is, but that's what he was billed as.
Yeah.
I think when they go back to the basics and just work on that, that's where they start to find themselves again. Is that going to work? I don't know. That's what I tell them to do.
I would say this, and I agree with that. I think if you look at where this started with Adley Rutschman, I think you go back to the beginning of last year. He hit for way more power the first half of last year. He became much more pull. I wouldn't say he was pull heavy, but pull heavier than he had been before. Hitting the ball pull side in the air more. It worked out great for about 2.5 months. I remember saying this to Alan on the phone. I'm going to use the same.
Well, he was taking pitches 2 years ago.
You know
ago.
What I compared yeah. it to? I compared it to the movie Major League 2. Willie Mays Hayes in spring training came in wanting to be a power hitter. He hit the you-know-what out of the ball in spring training and was hitting home runs. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, Willie Mays Hayes, year two, he's going to be even better. And then the regular season came, and it started to falter. Now, Adley Rutschman, the power numbers looked great through the end of June. Was there some kind of issue? He got hit on the hand. I think that was maybe part of it, but I do think he fundamentally changed his approach because he started walking way less the first half of last year.
Yep.
And that was another telltale sign. He got away from who he was, and this goes perfectly with what Alan was just saying, and I think it just kind of snowballed or deteriorated, however you want to describe it, from there. And I think he's just really struggled to get back to that. And I do think the mental part of it, I do think when you have two swings as a switch hitter,
absolutely.
I think that absolutely is a factor. Does that mean he should abandon ones? Not necessarily, but I do think that complicates things. And, oh, yeah, you're a catcher and you're handling work behind the plate and meetings with pitchers and you've had a lot of turnover with it. So, as we've talked about,
and you're losing.
This speaks to multiple variables at work here, but I agree.
He never lost. That was the kind of charm.
I also think that catchers need days off. This is why I would not take a catcher as a number one, as a 1-1. Catchers need days off. And
no more of those. Matt Wieters and Adley Rutschman now.
Let's end the DH every time he's not behind the plate thing. I know he hits better as a DH, but
I don't think that's been the case this year, though, actually.
Physical and mental rest is necessary, particularly for a catcher.
All right, look, this is Izzy Potoki, your councilman from the 2nd District. Look at that hat. Look at that hat.
It's a great hat.
That
though.
Hat screams.
He's wearing a Washington Nationals hat.
We're at Reader's. We're out here in two, as they would say. We're in Reisterstown, Registerstown, according to Gary Thorne. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. You have the Back to the Future scratch-offs. We're having a great day here. There's crabs. There's crab cakes. There's salads. There's soups. There's hoop tea. They got all sorts of stuff going on out here. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We will be on the 8th in the morning before it gets too hot at Deep Pasquale's in Canton. And then on the 10th, we'll be indoors at Costas Timonium, the new location. Christening it, although it's not my first crab cake tour stop in that space. That is on the 10th of July. Luke will be eating Max Pizza down in Wildwood all week for the 4th of July. I did a big piece on the Heritage Fair coming back to life in Dundalk, so all you Dundalk folks. I also, before I let my baseball guys go, have you ever seen me as excited as I was to have Fred Lynn on the show this week? I mean, be honest with me.
I haven't watched it yet, so I'm excited to see it.
He was phenomenal, man.
I believe
like,
it.
He was great. Do you know how much I love Fred Lynn?
I mean, knowing what era you grew up in?
Fred Lynn was my first favorite baseball player. I told him that. I mean, I was 7 years old. He wore my cousin's jersey.
Would have been a slam dunk Hall of Famer if not for injuries.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's call a
spade. Dude, go
spade.
Look at his numbers from 75 to 81. It's like.
It's crazy.
Woo! His 79 season. Woo! All right, Fred Lynn is on WNST this week. Izzy Patoka is waiting in line 27 years to get on the program. I'm going to bring him in. He's we're going to talk about the northwest side of town. We're going to talk about politics, talk about the community, talk about Reisterstown. I'm looking forward to it. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We're at Reader's in Reisterstown eating crab cakes. It's what we do.